Hi everyone, thanks for joining today. I'm Richard Wu, joined by Venkat Gautamneni here. We both work in Microsoft Azure Marketing. And just wanted to thank you again for joining. If you have any questions for us during the webinar, there's a Q&A widget at the bottom of your screen through which you can enter your questions. I'll be moderating today for Venkat, and our webinar is Extending Your Data Center to Azure. So with that, I'll hand it off to Venkat.
Hey, thanks, Richard, and welcome everybody again to this webinar on extending your data center to Azure. Like Richard mentioned, my name is Venkat Gautamneni, and I work in Microsoft Azure. I'm a product manager for infrastructure as a service, and specifically I focus on compute and networking services of the stack. So in today's session, what I wanted to do was spend some time first talking about the benefits of cloud in general that you as customers can benefit from in using Azure in conjunction with your on-premises environments. And then, you know, talk a little bit about why Azure makes for a great choice to do so. And then we'll dig a little deeper into some of the technologies you can use to extend your on-premises environments into Azure. And if we have time at the end, we'll do some question and answer as well. So before I begin, you know, in a big way, what I first of all wanted to do was a bit of a level set on why consider the cloud in the first place to extend your data center. This question used to come up a lot more a couple of years ago. Of late, I don't hear too much of this question from customers, but there are still some customers who are kind of pondering using cloud but are wondering what the benefits are of doing so. So I wanted to do a quick level set on the benefits that you as customers can get by using cloud in general. So the first big benefit is that of speed or agility. I've heard numerous times customers telling me that it takes them not days, but weeks and sometimes even months to procure and provision resources on premises. Of course, in the cloud world, it just takes minutes. Whether you spin up just one virtual machine or spin up 1,000 virtual machines, it's just going to take a few minutes. So there is this element of agility or speed that is associated with using cloud, especially for your applications. The second big benefit, obviously, is that of scale. And scale really comes in two flavors. One is increasing and decreasing usage of computing resources on demand, depending on what your applications require. And the second element of scale is that of global coverage. Even if you are running on-premises environments and your data centers in a co-location facility, perhaps, you probably have those environments just in one location. And with the cloud, what you suddenly get is data centers that are spread across the world. So for example, if you have your on-premises data center in the US, but you have your customers, let's say in Asia, you can actually run some of those applications in the Asian cloud data center and make sure that your customers get really good performance out of those applications. So there is this element of global coverage as well that you can enjoy with using cloud in conjunction with on-premises environments. And last but not the least is a big benefit of economics when you use cloud. Cloud obviously is a pay-as-you-go model for your computing resources. So you can spin up stuff when you need them and you can shut them off when you don't need. And you get a significant cost benefit of doing so. Now, the other big benefit obviously of the cloud is that you don't have to really incur the capital expenditure of having to provision all those extra resources, especially if your applications were to have peaks and valleys. You can shift some of those costs into operational costs and enjoy, you know, that kind of a capital structure where less capital expenditure upfront, but operational expenditure as the application runs and goes along. In fact, we did some studies with Forrester, and Forrester talked to a bunch of customers who are using on-premises environments in conjunction with Azure and determined that, on average, these customers were getting an ROI of roughly 349% when they were using, you know, cloud in conjunction with on-premise data center. So really, all in all, the big benefits of using cloud alongside your on-premises environments are those of speed, scale, and economics. Now, obviously, if you are managing on-premises environments, using the cloud does give you benefits, but definitely there are some considerations, right? Some questions you might have before you start adopting cloud in a big way for your organization. And usually when I talk to customers, the first question I get is, great, you know, cloud does offer me a bunch of benefits, but how do I really connect this so-called cloud environment to on-premises? How do I take my existing infrastructure and applications and integrate with the public cloud out there? Because that's obviously key to make sure that the data center extension you build in the cloud works seamlessly with your on-premises environment. A second question, obviously, is that of, you know, I got a lot of applications. I got a variety of applications running on premises. It's a heterogeneous environment that I run on premises that includes not just Windows, it includes Linux, it includes possibly Oracle, it includes SAP, maybe a bunch of open source, NoSQL DB, and so on and so forth. How can a cloud environment help me with this kind of a heterogeneous application environment? Can the cloud actually run and support all of these applications? Right, that's another big question I get often from IT folks when I talk about cloud. And the third, and also a very big question usually in the minds of IT for organizations when they're looking at cloud, is that of security and compliance. Obviously, suddenly you are running applications in a data center that you don't control or manage. And so the questions around security and compliance become paramount. You obviously want to protect your applications, and you want to make sure that the data that you're placing in the cloud is being secured and is protected. If you are, for example, you have to abide by certain industry compliance standards or regulatory obligations, this is obviously going to be a very important question for you as well. So in the next few minutes, let me, you know, showcase some of the attributes of Azure that address some of these considerations or challenges that you might have as you're considering, you know, extending that on-premises environment of yours and into the cloud and getting the benefits of cloud. So obviously the first one that we talked about was that of integration connectivity. In the Microsoft, at Microsoft and with Azure, we believe in a world that's on-premises and cloud. It's not about running your applications only on-premises or only in the public cloud. We really want to make sure that irrespective of where you run your applications, you get a good, consistent experience, be it on-premises or be it in Microsoft's cloud, which is Azure, or even in third-party cloud environments, which is running Microsoft Stack. And the way we are able to provide this consistent set of experiences for you as customers is by making sure that technologies such as virtualization, identity, development, databases, or and even management software run consistently across all of these clouds and provide you a great experience in doing so. Obviously, beyond this, we are also investing a lot in providing you rich connectivity options between on-premises and Azure, and we'll explore some of that in the later part of the presentation. So all in all, really when it comes to integrating on-premises environments and the public cloud, Azure really, really shines in this space. The second, you know, issue or consideration we talked about was that of heterogeneous environments that you're probably managing on-premises. Azure is no different. In Azure, we have first-party and awesome support for all of the Microsoft services and the stack, but we also have first-party and great support for third-party applications and even open source. In fact, 20% of virtual machines that run in Azure today are running in Linux. And there are a variety of Linux distributions, including Ubuntu, OpenSUSE, and so on, that are supported in Azure, validated and tested to run really well in Azure. If you look at databases, of course, Microsoft SQL Server really works well in Azure, is built in a lot of ways for Azure. But also, you know, other solutions like Hadoop, Oracle, and so on also great, work well, really well in Azure and are supported by the vendors in Azure. As you go up the stack, we have support for a variety of content management frameworks, including WordPress, Joomla, Drupal, and so on. If you're building applications in the mobile space, Android, Windows, as well as iPhone are supported. In the world of languages, if your developers are asking, hey, what frameworks does Azure support? We have great support for .NET, obviously. There's PHP, Python, Java, Ruby, Node.js. I mean, you kind of name it, and it's most likely supported in Azure. So hopefully that gives you a view of the kinds of things you as customers can do in Azure. So it is really meant for a heterogeneous environment and to mimic your on-premises environment, if you will. Now, as we talk about the third big bucket, which is security, there are two probably aspects that are important and relevant to you. One is that of compliance, but really the second one is about transparency, because no matter how much of compliance we have for the Azure platform, it's not going to be a complete story until and unless we're transparent with you in terms of what exactly happens in our data centers. In fact, as a mark of our transparency with you, we do let some important and key customers come and visit our data centers if you want to, so you can see firsthand how our data centers are managed and operated. And when it comes to compliance, there is a long list of certifications that Azure has today. We have ISO 27001, we have FedRAMP, PCI, SSA 16, SOC 1, HIPAA BA, and the list is actually quite long. And all of it is well documented on a public-facing website, which is called Trust Center, which you can access from Azure.com. We also offer monthly SLAs for our services, for all of our generally available services, and they're all financially backed. So in case we were not able to meet some of those SLAs we promise you, you get money-back guarantees. We also offer a real-time status dashboard where you can see the status of all of our services. So that's another way we're being completely transparent with you in terms of how services are doing. And if there were issues, we do a root cause analysis, and all of that analysis is also posted online for you to kind of see what's going on. Now, security story is obviously not complete without experience. Obviously, we're asking you to entrust your applications and your data to a public cloud platform. And when it comes to Azure, Azure data centers and the management is done by the same team that manages some of our largest services that we manage at a global scale. In fact, Microsoft has had a long history of managing these data centers. I think our first data center opened in 1989. And since then, we've amassed a large number of online services and assets, including some of the biggest in the world today, including Bing and Office 365 and so on. And the team that really manages all of these services is this called Global Foundation Services, and they're the same folks who manage Azure data centers as well. So you can bet that the experience and the learnings that we have in running some of these large applications online is automatically getting put into running Azure and your applications and managing your environments in Azure. So it is really a reliable and secure platform for you to trust your applications with. So hopefully that gives you a flavor of, you know, why Azure makes for a great choice for you to extend your on-premises environments and use Azure in conjunction with your on-prem environments. So now, having said that, let's dig deeper into some of the technologies in Azure that will allow you to easily extend your on-premises environments up into the cloud. Before even we go and talk about some of the services that Azure offers, I wanted to talk a little bit about our data center presence across the world. And this is going to be important to you because you as a customer get to really choose, you know, what kind of data center and where exactly in the world your applications and data will be located. For example, if you have an on-premises environment in the U.S., in the example that I mentioned earlier, and you have customers, let's say, in Asia, you probably want to choose the Asia-Pac data centers to run your applications and then connect the Azure data centers in Asia-Pac region back to on-premises in the United States. So this picture gives you kind of like a global layout of all the Azure regions we have today. Today, we have 19 Azure regions that you can select from the portal. And you get to choose where your data is and where your applications are actually running. We got 4 in the U.S., 1 in South America, 2 in Europe, and 4 of them in Asia, 2 in China, and 2 in Australia. We also announced plans to open data centers in India recently, which should go live sometime in the next calendar year. So now that we know where Azure data centers are located and we've established that you as customers have complete choice on where your data is and your applications are running, let me talk a little bit about the platform itself. Azure is really a collection of services. The platform is a collection of services that run across all of those data centers. And irrespective of which data center you choose, you get to use all of these services. The services in general can be thought of as being in 3 different buckets: infrastructure services at the very bottom, data services that allow you to manage your data, be it NoSQL databases or SQL databases. And then we have a bunch of application services up top, such as caching, identity, service bus, media, and so on and so forth. This slide here just gives you a representative sample of some of the services we have. The actual list is pretty long and can be accessed by going to our management portal. Now, all of these services, if you were an Azure customer and if you were to sign up for the account and go online, all of these services can be accessed and you can manage and configuring these, you can configure these services via manage.azure.com. And this is a screenshot of what you will see in the portal, in the management portal. On the left-hand side, you will see a list of all the services that are available. And on the right-hand side, the pane basically shows you, depending on what service you chose, there are a variety of options for either for you to configure a particular service or for you to monitor a particular service. So If you have not played with Azure already, I would urge you to at least sign up for a trial account and get to play with Azure and get some experience in configuring and running some of these services so you can familiarize with the cloud in Azure in an easy manner. So obviously, you know, there are a lot of services. In fact, Azure has more than 24 services today. But when you are talking about extending on-premises environments, what I really want to do is dig deeper into some of these services, such as virtual machines, such as virtual networks, VPN technologies, so we can establish a clear understanding of what technologies you would really want to use in order to connect on-premises environments up into Azure and use Azure almost like your secondary data center or an extension of on-premises data center. So in this picture here, it's a simple representative example of using a few of these services, such as virtual machines, virtual network, and VPN technologies in Azure, and connecting it back into on-premises. So really, in this case, you're using Azure as your own data center up in the public cloud and managing in that way as well. So let's dig a little deeper into some of these technologies now. I'll spend some time talking about virtual machines, which is obviously fundamental and critical to using Azure. I'll talk a little bit about some of the networking technologies that allow you to connect back to on-premises and also to secure your environments in Azure. And then we'll talk a little bit about identity, extending your identity infrastructure on-premises up into Azure, and spend a little bit of time at the end talking about management. I also have a couple of customer case studies I will highlight as we go along, so it gives you an example. It gives you good examples of how other customers are using Azure and reaping some of the benefits of extending on-premises environments up into Azure. So virtual machines, like I mentioned, is a fundamental building block for you to use Azure. A virtual machine is no different from what you're probably used to on-premises if you're running a virtualized environment in your own data center. A virtual machine, typically what we offer is a variety of sizes, and you can choose them by the number of cores and the amount of memory and the amount of hard disk the virtual machine comes with. And typically when you choose a virtual machine, you get two drives by default. You get a C drive and you get a D drive. Of course, this is in Windows. If you were to use Linux, obviously, you know, your C drive is the equivalent of your root, and then your temp disk is basically slash temp. Now, the D drive is going to be your temporary drive, which means if the machine were to shut off, that data gets lost. So be careful on what you place on the D drive. It's great for keeping some things for immediate access, for some data that you want to actually do some computation on, but it's not really good for, you know, persistent data. The persistent data you want to keep on the C drive or optionally on additional data disks that you can add onto your virtual machine. So you can add up to 16 1 terabyte data disks to a virtual machine. And the persistent disks, which is C drive and your data disks, are backed by what we call the Azure Blob Service. Azure Blob Service is a geo-redundant, highly available storage solution that gives you a durability of 3 copies of data that is automatically maintained within a given data center or Azure region. And all of this happens without your knowledge. That means every single write that you do to a C drive automatically gets backed up 3 times within the same data center. This obviously gives you durability and availability of your data. Now, optionally, we have also a feature called geo-replication. And if you turn that feature on, you get not just those 3 copies within a single region, you also get an extra 3 copies of replication in a region that's hundreds of miles away, another Azure region altogether. So that actually gives you a total protection against regional disasters. If the entire data center were to go down, your data is still protected, and that feature is an optional feature, and we call that geo-replication. And by the way, all of this protection and replication happens without you even configuring anything. C drive and all of the data disks are automatically relying on Blob Service and the Blob Storage solution that provides this benefit to your data. Now, optionally, if that were not enough, we do have the option for you to have additional drives, mount additional drives, such as G, Edge, and so on, whatever letter you want to choose. And those can be connected with a service called Azure Files. Now, Azure Files is nothing but a SMB file server provided to you as a service. So rather than you having to configure a file server, especially if you wanted to share data across different virtual machines, we provide that to you as a service. And you can actually have mount points on that service across multiple virtual machines. So this is yet another way of adding additional storage capacity to your virtual machines when you run your applications, and sharing that data across multiple virtual machines, be it configuration settings, or even be it just data that you want, you know, multiple machines to access, perhaps for computation. This is a great way to kind of get that set up. So earlier I mentioned that, you know, when you select virtual machines in Azure to run your applications, you have a choice, a long list of a variety of virtual machines that we have. They're neatly segregated into three families of virtual machines that we offer. The first is called A family, or the A series of virtual machines. And these have been our oldest, some of our oldest virtual machines that we offer, but they're also the highest value for your dollar in terms of compute that you get for the dollar that you spend on Azure. They come in two flavors, basic and standard sizes. If you want to learn more details, I would urge you to go onto our website and learn about the nuances of the differences between what basic can do and what standard can do. There are also two different types of A family called general purpose and high memory application instances. So if you were to have standard applications, I would suggest using general purpose versions of A family. But if you had high memory requirements, then obviously the high memory instances make a ton of sense. There are also two sizes in the A family called A8 and A9 that are really suitable for high performance applications, such as MPI applications. And these do come with an extra network interface that is InfiniBand supported. And with the RDMA driver that you get in Windows, you can have a really fast interconnect between virtual machines, especially if you choose A8 and A9. And so if you have such needs, then obviously do take a look at A8 and A9. Now, earlier this year, we launched a newer fleet of machines called the D family. Now, D family are much faster than the A series. They're about, on average, 60% faster than A series. They do have new hardware, and they have local SSD storage. So earlier, when I mentioned the temp drive or the D drive, now the temp drive for the D family is going to be backed by SSD storage, which is obviously a lot faster than magnetic drives, which is what A series or the A family of instances have. These series do go all the way up to 112 GB of RAM and 16 virtual cores. So if you have really fast applications, compute intensive applications that require a lot of memory, I would suggest going with the D family. This is the latest addition to the Azure family of instances. We also announced yet another family of instances called the G family, which are going to be even more powerful than the D series that we already have today. These are really meant for your giant workloads. If you have a giant SQL or NoSQL database or a data warehousing solution that you need a lot of compute capacity, a lot of RAM, these make perfect sense for you. The G family will carry up to 32 CPU cores, up to half a terabyte of RAM and 6.5 terabyte of local SSD. So if you think about it, these are really, really large for some of your most demanding applications. These machines are also fitted with the latest generation Intel processor that's Haswell based. And so these machines are not available for you yet, but in short order, we will have these available for you. So that hopefully gives you a picture of some of the instances that we have in Azure. We have the A family, the D family, and the G family. And depending on your application need, you can choose whatever family that you'd like to use, and within the family, the particular instance size that you'd like to use. So let me spend now a minute to talk about, now once you've chosen the instance that you want to run in Azure, how do you exactly bring your applications from on-premises to Azure and run those applications in these instances? So the neat feature in about Azure is that if you're using Hyper-V on-premises, all you have to do is sysprep your disk, your VHD, upload that to Azure, and spin up a VM using that VHD. Obviously, this is great if you are trying to lift and shift some applications. There is no conversion involved, especially if you're using Hyper-V environments on-premises. The same VHD format that works on-premises on the Hyper-V hypervisor will run in the Azure environment as well. Now, obviously, that's one way of doing it. The other way of doing it is we have a rich set of gallery images for you to choose from in Azure. As the screenshot on the slide shows, we have a long list of applications that are pre-tested and uploaded to the image gallery. They are not just Microsoft images, such as Windows Server or SQL Server. They're also third-party images from Ubuntu, CentOS, SUSE, Oracle, and so on and so forth. So all of the ecosystem that we have around Azure, the images are available for you to use immediately with a particular virtual machine of your choice with a few clicks. And the neat thing about doing that is that several of those images have billing included. So for example, if you don't have a SQL Server license, you can still use SQL Server in Azure by using a pay-as-you-go model, where you only are paying for the SQL Server for the amount of time you are actually using the SQL Server for. So that's a neat way of testing out some new applications or even playing around, and especially if you don't have licenses that you can bring from on-premises. So there are two ways, basically, of running applications in Azure. One is uploading your own VHDs that will run in Azure, and the second way is to choose applications in the image gallery and then do a few clicks, and your VM gets set up with that application. Now, the other couple of things I'll mention here is all of the Azure virtual machines are completely pay-as-you-go and per minute. So if you were to run an application, for example, for 44 minutes, you only get billed for 44 minutes, not for the entire hour. And that's something unique that Azure offers that you don't find elsewhere in the public cloud. And if you wanted an SLA out of virtual machines, you do get a 99.95% availability, especially when you use a concept called availability groups. What availability group really does is it lets you run a couple of virtual machines across different fault domains that are separated in such a way that if there was a power failure or some kind of a failure, only one virtual machine gets affected, not the other one. So by putting two machines in what we call an availability group, you get high availability, and we can guarantee you with an SLA of 99.95%. So really, virtual machines is a neat solution for you to start using in Azure, which is no different from your on-premises environments. Now, I just wanted to talk about a customer example where a customer, in this case, Telenor, used Azure for their test and dev environment of SharePoint application. So Telenor was facing this challenge of upgrading SharePoint 2007 to SharePoint 2013 across all of their business units and spread across 12 different countries. And obviously, like any typical on-premise data center environment, they were running out of capacity. They wanted close to 100 virtual machines, and that they didn't have capacity for in the on-premises environment to do the test and dev work required for this migration from SharePoint 2007 to 2013. So what they ended up doing is setting that test and dev environment in Azure, almost treating that Azure environment as an extension of their existing data center, running all the tests, all the development effort in those virtual machines up in Azure. And once all of that was completed, they actually brought that application back to on-premises to replace their production application. So this was an example where somebody, spun up a bunch of virtual machines in Azure, used them for a few weeks, did their test and dev, and after they were done with it, went back to on-premises very easily. And this was easy because, earlier I mentioned the format of the VHDs is the same. And some of the technologies are common between on-premises and Azure. So this is an example where a customer basically used Azure as an extension of on-premises environment, and once they were done with it, completely went back on-premises. So, this option is always available for you. Of course, if you want to continue to run your application Azure in production mode, by all means, you can do so. But if you're not comfortable with that for whatever reason, compliance or performance or what have you, you always have the option of running it back on-premises as well. So now that we talked about virtual machines and how they form a fundamental part of any kind of an Azure extension for your on-premises environments, let's spend a few minutes talking about some networking technologies that are also going to be equally critical in managing that environment. The most important concept I want to spend some time on is called Azure Virtual Network. Azure Virtual Network is really a logical, isolated container for you in Azure, inside of which you can run your applications and your virtual machines, and you can define your own networking topology. So, for example, when you construct an Azure Virtual Network, you can do things like, do your own private addresses within that virtual network. You can, splice IP addresses there in subnets. You can apply firewall policies to those subnets. You can do ACLing between the VMs. You can bring your own DNS server up into Azure. So in reality, Azure Virtual Network really allows you and gives you the control to do exactly what you're doing on-premises, but in Azure. And obviously, this is really powerful for you guys out there who are, you know, data center infrastructure folks or network admins. This is really powerful. And the other neat thing about Azure Virtual Network is everything is software defined. You can do all of these things either via API or with a few clicks inside of the portal. All of the configuration can be done with a few clicks inside of the portal. Now, obviously, virtual networks are great for running your applications in Azure, but the really neat thing about virtual networks is they provide you a variety of options to connect back to on-premises, which is obviously really important when you're thinking about Azure as an extension of on-premises environments. I'll talk about three different ways you can connect an Azure virtual network back to on-premises. The first of which, what we call is a site-to-site VPN connection. Once you have a virtual network in Azure, what you can do is you can spin up a virtual network VPN gateway up in Azure and then connect it back to a VPN device that's on-premises. So that VPN device can be a Cisco device or a Juniper device or any device in the long list of devices that we support. All of that list is published online for you to take a look at. And optionally, you can also, if you don't want to have a hardware VPN device on-premises, you just want to run Windows Server in an RAS mode and make that as a VPN device on-premises, that works well as well. Obviously, this is an IPsec-based solution. This is running over the internet, but it's very secure because it's IPsec. There are a variety of neat features in virtual network, such as we have different gateway sizes for the type of connectivity you want. If you want really a large amount of bandwidth, we recently announced what we call a high-performance gateway size that you want to take a look at. We also do force tunneling with virtual network. So if your compliance or security requirements are such that none of the traffic from Azure leaves to internet directly, but everything is coming back on-premises, you can enable force tunneling in a virtual network and take care of that. So it's a really neat solution. Now, obviously, site-to-site VPN connection requires configuration at your end on-premises of whatever device that you have, and sometimes that means conversations with the security folks, that requires conversations with the network folks, and so on and so forth. So that's a good solution, but that does incur some of the costs of, you know, having to configure on-premises devices and so on and so forth. The next connectivity solution is what we call a point-to-site VPN connection. Now, this is fairly simple to set up. It takes all of a few minutes to get the setup going. It works even if you were sitting behind a firewall or a proxy of some sort in your on-premises data center. And it relies on the VPN client that is already baked into the Windows operating system on your machines. Obviously, the solution is great if you're just trying to do a proof of concept, because then you don't have to go and disturb the network admin or the security folks to configure a VPN device on-premises. You can just have this connection going from a single server on-premises up into a virtual network within a few minutes. But this is not a very scalable solution. If you wanted to connect an entire data center up into Azure, this is probably not the best way to do it. You still want to go and do the site-to-site VPN. But point-to-site VPN allows you to test things quickly before you go on to a site-to-site VPN type of solution. So basically, these two solutions complement each other in the way in which you want to set VPN up. Now, a third solution, which we announced earlier this year, is called ExpressRoute. What ExpressRoute really does is it allows you to connect to Azure without going over the public internet. So, for example, if you are co-located at a co-location facility, you can have a direct line up into Azure. If you're using an MPLS network provided by a big telco such as AT&T or Verizon or Tata or Telstra in Australia, you can use ExpressRoute to have fast connectivity up into Azure, relying on those private networks that you already have in place. The big advantage of ExpressRoute is that you get private connectivity, but you also get very high throughput connectivity. With ExpressRoute, you can go all the way up until 10 Gbps style connections with Azure. So if you had a sophisticated network which uses a lot of private network and you have a lot of requirement on low latencies or high throughput, or stringent security compliance requirements, this is a neat solution to make sure that Azure appears like another node on your existing private network. So we talked about three solutions really for you to connect up into Azure. We talked about, you know, site-to-site VPN. We talked about point-to-site VPN. And both of them are great solutions if you are coming via the internet and they're really secure. And then we talked about ExpressRoute, which is obviously a solution if you wanted to connect completely privately to Azure using a high throughput connection and a low latency connection. So all of these three options are available. And the other thing is virtual networks can also talk to each other using what we call a VNet to VNet connection. So in the picture that I'm depicting here, this is an example of perhaps a more sophisticated organization that has a bunch of customer sites and that is leveraging all these three types of connectivity solutions that I talked about to kind of hook all the different environments to each other. So needless to say, Azure does offer network connectivity solutions for all types of scenarios. So if you have a requirement, talk to us and we should be able to help you in figuring out what the right way of connecting your environment up to Azure would be. So I wanted to maybe spend a minute on a customer example called Accelera in this case. Accelera is a company that's based out of in Virginia. And what Accelera really does for customers is they have a virtual desktop solution that customers run. It's a VDI in the cloud type of solution that they have. And primarily before they adopted Azure, they were running this at a co-location facility in Equinix. And earlier this year, they expected, they had some unexpected increase in the number of customers who were needing virtual hosted desktops. And that was sparked by some bad weather in the U.S. East Coast that we had in early part of 2014. So what they decided at that time is rather than go and, you know, procure and provision a whole bunch of extra hardware to deal with that demand, they decided to put some of those virtual desktops in Azure. And they hooked their on-premises environment, in this case that was residing in Equinix co-location facility, with Express Route connection. And they were immediately able to service the demand from their customers by using Azure. So obviously, you know, some of the benefits that we've been talking about so far about getting, you know, speed, getting the scale, and getting cost benefits, Accelera was able to see it firsthand by choosing Azure and using Azure in conjunction with their on-premises environment. So hopefully this gives you yet another example of how a customer is using Azure alongside on-premises to meet peak demand of a particular application. So we talked about virtual machines, we talked about networking, and obviously one thing you must be wondering by now is, hey, what about identity? The one thing I haven't mentioned so far is if you were to obviously spin up a virtual network in Azure, run some VMs in there, because they can be connected back to on-premises using a VPN connection, obviously you can domain join those VMs running in virtual network back on-premises and hence make sure that those VMs belong to the same identity framework that you have running on-premises. But obviously that works, that's a great solution for virtual machines, but what about actual identities that you have on-premises? How do you take those identities and integrate with applications in cloud? So that's one part of the question. The other part of the question you might have in your mind is a lot of customers today, a lot of your users, internal users, are using SaaS applications such as Office 365, Windows Intune, and obviously non-Microsoft SaaS applications such as Box or even Amazon Web Services. How do you exactly take identity infrastructure that you're running on premises and deal with the complexity of managing these identities in the cloud? So I want to introduce a service called Azure Active Directory. That's a really neat solution and a comprehensive solution for you to manage identities in the cloud environment. So the way really Azure Active Directory works is it hooks with your on-premises directory environment, be it Windows Server Active Directory or other directories if you so have. Now, and you can choose your favorite technology, which is either federation or synchronization that basically hooks up to Azure Active Directory. And then Azure Active Directory in turn provides single sign-on, provides the identity, acts as an identity provider for all of those SaaS applications. So this is a really neat way of managing identities up in the public cloud such that you're not just on-prem applications work fine with those credentials that you have going on premises, but also Azure applications as well as third-party SaaS applications. So Azure Active Directory is a comprehensive identity and access management solution. So if you have additional, issues of managing identities, I would really urge you to look at this solution. And today, I think we support upwards of 2,500 SaaS applications, So all of those, your favorite SaaS applications, such as Box or Dropbox, all of them are supported and integrated with Azure Active Directory. So if you had, use cases where your internal customers or external customers are using some of these applications out there and you are having to manage these identities for them, Azure Active Directory can really help you there. So we talked about identity for a little bit. We talked about virtual machines and networking. I just wanted to spend a minute or two in talking about managing the Azure-based data center extension that you'll be building up in the cloud. There are really a variety of ways of managing your Azure resources once you start using Azure. Of course, the most comprehensive way of doing it is using the Azure Management Portal that I showed a screenshot of in the earlier part of the presentation. But that's not the only way. There are many different ways you can manage those resources. Like I mentioned earlier, all of the Azure services are built using REST APIs. So you can actually build custom applications to manage applications and resources in Azure. Optionally, there are PowerShell commandlets for many of the Azure services that you can use. And if you're very familiar with PowerShell, you can use PowerShell. You can script PowerShell and manage resources in Azure that way as well. Additionally, we do have a number of third-party management software solutions such as WhiteScale that are integrated with Azure. And if you're to use one of those solutions, you can obviously manage resources. And if you're using System Center on-premises, that's yet another great way of managing Azure resources alongside your on-premises environments. So Azure, obviously, there is the portal environment, but that is not the only way to manage Azure resources. There are many different ways. System Center, third-party applications, PowerShell, REST APIs, all of them are great ways of managing those resources, and you should choose the right approach that fits your needs best. So with that, hopefully, we covered some ground when it comes to management, identity, networking, and virtual machines in Azure. And really, these are the fundamental building blocks if you're thinking about using Azure to extend your on-premises environment. By no means, this is the only way you can extend. There are a lot of different ways you can start to use Azure in conjunction with on-premises. But I just wanted to make sure that, I set context of what some of the common building blocks tend to be for customers as they're thinking about Azure using Azure in conjunction with on-premises. So that really wraps up this webinar. I'm happy to take questions if there are any now.
All right. Thanks, Venkat, for a great presentation. And, yes, we do have a few questions coming in from the audience. So our first question is, I'm an IT pro and new to Azure. So what should my first steps be to familiarize myself with the platform?
Thanks, Richard. And that's a great question. I get that often from a lot of folks who are new to Azure, new to cloud, but yet want to kind of dip their toes in the cloud. Really the first step, if you've never used Azure before, is to go and sign up for a trial account. We do have a great trial account, trial subscription that you can sign up for. You just enter your credit card details. And by the way, you don't get charged for your credit card. We just want the credit card details to make sure that you're a legitimate person. And then once you set that up, you can use your credentials, you can log into Azure, and immediately you can start doing things like spinning up VMs or setting up a virtual network and some of the things that we talked about in this presentation, right? Looking at some of the images that are available for you to choose. Really, if you wanted to do a simple thing as setting up a virtual network in Azure, spinning up a VM in Azure, spinning up a VPN gateway, and connecting that back to your client machine, say a laptop, all of that really takes about 10 to 15 minutes. It is possible to really, have a data center extension Azure set up in 15 minutes. So I would suggest, first step is to set up a trial account, and second step is to, spin up a virtual network and a virtual machine, and then connect it back to your laptop. Those three steps, if you're able to accomplish, I would say you're like far ahead in the cloud game.
All righty. We have a second question coming in here. How should I think about the different ways of connecting the Azure environment with on-premises?
Yeah, and that's again a great question. And, I tried and covered a little bit of that detail in the presentation just now. When it comes to networking, there are really three different ways that I talked about, right? I talked about site-to-site connectivity, if you're trying to connect your entire on-premises environment using a VPN gateway. So that's one approach, obviously. We talked about point-to-site connectivity. If you have a single server or even a client machine that you want to connect to Azure for a proof of concept or a development type scenario, you can do so. And really, the sophisticated way of connecting up to Azure is Express Route. Once you're, you know, using Azure in a significant manner, you want to basically think about using Express Route to have that connection, because that gives you, you know, up to 10 Gbps style connections up into Azure. And more important than the high speed connections, it also gives you very low latencies. So that Azure environment almost behaves and looks like it's running on premises. So those basically are the three ways of connecting up to Azure: site to site, point to site, and Express Route at a networking layer. And so those are some of the things I covered in this presentation as well.
All right, that's very good information. We have a question here from Sridhar. What is the difference between cloud service and virtual machine?
Yeah, that's a good question. So virtual machine is literally what you expect it is. It's a VM. You get a bunch of RAM, you get a bunch of hard disk and a bunch of compute, right? And you can install whatever you want on top, Windows Server, Linux, and what have you, and you manage it yourself. So that's what a virtual machine is. A cloud service is basically our platform as a service offering. So virtual machine is an infrastructure service offering, and a cloud service is a platform as a service offering. When you use compute in a cloud service, the underlying operating system is automatically installed for you on an instance and managed for you on that instance. And you get additional benefits in addition to patching and management of the underlying operating system. You get additional benefits of using a full-blown platform as a service offering. So really, cloud service, the way I think about it is, if you were to use Azure in a platform as a service manner, you want to think about using cloud services. If you want to use Azure in an infrastructure as a service manner, you want to basically use virtual machines. Most IT professionals are comfortable with VMs because that's what they've been used to. But developers, on the other hand, if you're building applications in Azure or against Azure, cloud services do offer really interesting benefits, so that you don't have to worry about the underlying operating system or what have you. You just worry about the application and the code, and everything else is taken care of for you. Hopefully that helps differentiate the two options that we have for Azure.
All right, we've gotten a couple of questions around physical versus virtual storage here, and this question comes from John. Could you provide any high-level context on when Azure storage is physical versus virtual?
Okay, that's a good question. So all of Azure storage it's running in our data centers. We have a lot of storage, right? The way it is abstracted out to customers, however, is everything is sort of virtualized or software-defined. And it's abstracted out using blobs or tables or queues. They're different varieties of storage that we offer. And you talk with the storage essentially via REST APIs. That's basically how you talk to storage. And the underlying how it's implemented is completely abstracted out for customers. So as an example, if you were to put an object into the blob storage, you basically call out APIs such as put object. If you want to retrieve the object, you can, say get object. And beyond that, there is nothing you as a customer need to worry about. The underlying technology is such that that object, is copied, and three replicas of that are maintained within a data center. And then if your application is turned on, six copies of that are maintained, three in a given data center and three in a data center far away. So I guess the short answer here is all of Azure storage is software defined. Of course, it's running physical storage underneath that is not really exposed to customers.
All righty. We have a question coming in here from Guadalupe. He's wondering how complex it is to maintain Azure Virtual Cloud Security.
How complex is it to maintain Azure Virtual Cloud Security? Just so I understand the question right, I think it's about how do you maintain a security boundary around a virtual network in Azure? Is that what the question is about?
We'll see if Guadalupe gets back to us on that. In the meantime, Sridhar has another question. If I run VMs as part of availability group, do I have to pay for all the VMs?
Yes, you have to. So, for example, if you wanted high availability for a VM, for an application, you want to make sure that it's at least running in two VMs inside of an availability group. And for the extra amount that you pay, you obviously get the SLA that's associated with that, and just the peace of mind that your application is never going down, right? So you do pay extra for that extra VM that you're running.
Okay, Guadalupe confirms that this question is indeed what you paraphrased it to.
Perfect. So yeah, when it comes to security of a virtual network, like I mentioned earlier, virtual network is a logically isolated container. Now, it is still multi-tenant, which means that you cannot be 100% sure that your VM is not running adjacent to another customer's VM, but they're completely logically isolated at the host hypervisor layer, right? And the IP addresses, or the rather the private IP addresses that you define for your VM inside of a virtual network, it can be whatever you want. And so if there are two customers, customer A defines the exact same private IP address and customer B defines the exact same private IP address, Azure handles that for you. You don't have to worry about any sort of IP address conflicts and so on and so forth. So that's one layer of security that you get automatically by using virtual networks. The other couple of things to think about in virtual network as they relate to security are, one is host tunneling that we talked about. You can seal a virtual network entirely such that no traffic goes between a virtual machine that is running inside a virtual network and internet. You can make sure that all of the traffic goes on premises. Even if it were leaving for internet, you can define routing policies such that the traffic goes back on premises before it goes to internet, right? You can absolutely do that. There are other security features of virtual networks, such as you can actually instantiate virtual machines with multiple network interfaces within a virtual network. So if you wanted to run some load balancers or firewalls or what have you that required multiple network interfaces, you can do that as well within a virtual network. So these are some of the basic security features that I would, think about as I'm thinking about using a virtual network environment and securing that virtual network environment.
Speaking of firewalls, Radar asks, with cloud service, do I have a choice to use third-party vendors at firewall or L4 to L7 services?
For cloud services, because it is a platform as a service offering and the operating system and below is completely managed and installed for you, there is no way you can use, a third-party appliance inside of a cloud service. Now, that said, if you were to use a virtual network and put a cloud service inside of a virtual network, that possibility is, always there. Because then what you're doing is you're bringing in a third-party appliance like an L7 load balancer and running it inside of a VM, and that VM basically load balances for the cloud service that's running inside of a virtual network. So it is possible, but you have to think a little bit about how you bring in that appliance and configure it such that it works with the cloud service that you have.
All right, we have a question coming in from an anonymous audience member who wants to learn more about the technologies we talked about here. So where can I learn more about this?
Yeah, that's a great question. And obviously, like I mentioned before, this was meant more of an introductory session for those of you who are new to Azure or just new to cloud in general. If you wanted to really learn more about some of these technologies, I would suggest going to azure.com. That's our public-facing website. And there is a documentation section where, everything is neatly kind of like identified. So that's obviously one avenue. Of course, yet another avenue is Channel 9, where all of our presentations are uploaded. So if you are more of a person who loves to watch videos of people presenting technologies, even from the recent conferences such as TechEd, Channel 9 can be a great resource. So I would suggest those two being the big, resources for you to get more information on some of the things we talked about here.
All right, so that is all the questions we have coming in for now. We'll still be around here for a couple of minutes in case you'd like to see more.
Great, thanks, Richard. And thank you all for attending this session.
Okay, Sridhar has another question. Is the multi-NIC interface available, and are there any limitations around that?
Yes, multi-NIC or NIC is available. We made it available at TechEd Europe at the end of October. So the limitation there is the multi-NIC feature is available for a few of the types of virtual machines. So it's not available for every single type of virtual machine out there. And depending on the type of machine that you choose, you actually get either two NICs or more NICs or three NICs, right? So I would urge you to take a look at our MSDN document that actually lists all the different types of virtual machines that support multi-NICs, and also the number of IP addresses per NIC or the number of NICs per machine. All of that information is there on the MSDN page.